Thank you, John. I share a lot of common concerns with Marty. Number one, work in a pretty harsh environment, but at least we've got a solid standing ground. Number two, we definitely need some young ones to help. Hold on, please. Okay, the first question is, my proposal is people asking, frozen soil liquid? No, if they're undisturbed frozen. But once you expose the profile and not assembling fast enough, the frozen stuff is melt, you get a liquid medium. So that's why I plug my talk here. And so just show some examples. You know, this one, okay, this ice content more than 60%, so water table rises pretty fast. This one, you can see the soil, frozen soil softening off the surface, and this one, the coast, it keeps softening down like this. So that's why I said they are not liquid, but if you don't do fast, they are liquid. So the characteristic of the ice-rich material, the jelly soil, normally the organic jelly soil, the segregated ice in ice lenses and ice build, ice wedge, you can see very clearly. But in the mineral soil, they are highly perturbated, and the horizon is nothing like a flat, so the resolution of the horizon is very bad. Then the ore soils, those are the young jelly soils, the relatively flat, easy sample, but the turbial are the majority we have to deal with. So this example of organic jelly soil. And this permafrost table around about 40, 42. So this one relatively is flat, organic, sediments, organic. Then this organic starting perturbated and ice-rich material and ice wedge. So this one a little easier. But look at this one, we call the non-sturdy circle, like a pillow on a surface like this. And in between the pillow, you can circle organic material, and the horizon come like this. So how do we deal with this? The horizon, we're not starting from the same level, and the depth increment. So I just keep showing this. So the more perturbated soils, okay, like this one is really a mess. Mineral, organic rich material, and organic with sediments mixed up here. And this is what we call a frost boil, or the non-sturdy circle on the surface. Just rains on the surface. And then this one, you see the you know, repeated freeze salt caused the ice-rich material called a lenticular whatever structure. Here is a pure ice wedges. And this one, here we have this material here, a frost boil, organic being squeezed down, and into this horizon, organic mixed with the mineral into this layer. The ore cells are the young ones, relatively flat, organic, and parent material here. So a little easier to deal with. So the first one, before we sample, we need to describe the soil, okay? Because once we delineate the horizon, we can know the samples, which horizon we can do the rest. But most jelly soils are really perturbated. So the conventional description method really doesn't suit. We need to modify quite a bit. So both the horizon identification and sampling has to compete with the sawing of the frozen soil mass. That's why got to do it fast. So this is an example in the Arctic coast. Okay, Alaska, Canada, Russia are the same. You look at the coastal plain, we call the ice wedge polygons, the size anywhere from 7 to 20 meters. But look at the ground, here's the low center polygon, the rim, and here's the trough. So this is the micro relief. Then you look at the soils, this is what you have. In the trough, basically you have organic over ice wedge, so there's one component. Typical glassy still, glassy means ice. Then when ice wedge expand, it squeeze the soil, so we have a hamstill. Basically, it's organic, frozen organic soil. Then the center, which is also, okay. But in taxonomy, we don't have three components. From the center of this trough to about here, 7 meters, this is called one paddon. And we need to describe sample data as one unit. So this will be according to taxonomy. That's our paddon. This is a classic histoturbial, you know, classic with ice, histo, because a lot of organic, turbial cryotabated. Then from here, the center of the polygon is a typical histo also. So we want to move away from the coastal plain to the little south, you know, foothills. This is called the Tusk Tundra. Okay, look further away, looks pretty nice. But getting closer, that's you're going to walk on this with your backpack. And what is underneath? So this is a frost boil here, overgrown by vegetation. Here's the inter frost boil dominated by organic and thick moss layer. So in July, this is how much thawing we call it active layer. Over here, the less than 20 centimeters. So if we strip off the organic mat, this is what we see here. We see a frost boil reversed to the surface topography, basically the surface like this, but the bottom going like this. So we see repeatedly a frost boil ball, and here's the organic rich material become rich. So this is what happened here. So that is what we define our paddon from center of the inner boil to center of the boil. Same thing here, from the center of frost boil to the center of inner boil. This one paddon, we're going to define this. Same thing here, from here to here, this one paddon. Okay. Then we job is delineate the horizons. That's quite a headache. You can decide in the field, measure it. The best way is to use a Polaroid camera. You can shoot it and try it out. Use the mark pen to mark the horizon right away. Same time, you keep a soft surface, trying to get a clean surface so you can sample. But coming to this, this is a big headache, trying to compete with the sawing. But anyway, we did it. But just showing the complexity here. So what problem we face is the uneven surface of topography. Where is your starting 0 point? Okay. Normally we start at the highest point. Okay. Then with irregular depth increment, one problem 0 to 10 is here. Next one, I says 10 to 15 actually started from the low part. Rather 10 is reference to high point, not to the surface. So you got a center point of reference. So we set the sampling depth and calculate the paddon cross area. So if we hold paddon exposed, we delineate total area. Then we measure each horizon, so quote unquote horizon, is a percentage area to the whole profile. Then we can make a collapse the whole profile into flat, you know, and to calculate the carbon density. So this is how we do it. So sampling. So first time we use a shovel down to where it's frozen. Okay. In the cloud method, in NRCS method, we can use the cloud method. Okay. But at the lower part of the saturated zone, you cannot use the cloud. You got a soup. Then in the frozen soil, of course, first time we try it, we get a saran cloud hanging there. The saran coating is solid, but inside you squeeze it, it's really soft. Okay, mm-hmm. That's the end of it. So the only way to do it is use a jackhammer. Where is it? Use a jackhammer, get a frozen soil. Then we cut the frozen soil into blocks, cubics. Then we measure it, put in a plastic bag. Or you can use an impact hammer, get a core, to get a cylinder core to get a sample. So in the wetland area, like a marsh, you know, water on the surface, the open pit, you know, the pump is not fast enough. So we use a separate core or hand drill to get the core out. So this is the jackhammer. This thing weighs 55 pounds. Okay, that's why we need young ones, real strong ones. And the same thing, the blue collar worker do the cement pounding, same thing. So under this, we can get a block like this frozen, commercial dimension, cut much as precise as possible. And this one automatically, bulk density already compensated for the ice content. Okay. And we get a chunk out with gravel. So we cut blocks, and eventually we saw it. We get the gravel out, compensated for the volume. We still get a bulk density. But this just shows, you know, jackhammer down to eventually to a meter, this ice rich layer like that. And this one is very good. The ice melt, you can see the lenticular structure. We can cut a very nice block here. But this is about 55% ice. That doesn't look much. So in the coastal marsh, like you have, only thing we have ice here. So we use the separate core here and get down to where you can see the ice-rich material. And this is the soil blocks. So we can cut in sections, measure the bulk density, eventually the ice content, or the chemical analysis. So this we can go down to about 3 meters, depends how much extension core you want. But the deeper you go, the danger get frozen, because the permafrost temperature in the coast about -7 to -10. You got to keep the core, keep rotating. If you stop 10 seconds, it freeze shut. You can get out. So you can dump 2 gallons of antifreeze, wait for a day to get it out. So another way we do it is to get a clean surface, use the hand drill. It's 5 centimeter diameter, about 10 centimeter, going to get a core. And then this is pretty handy, you can get a lot, but you got to charge the battery at night, and just probably get 5 cores. That's about it. So you got 3 set of battery to do the whole thing. Or you can use a separate cores for a lot of frozen organics and dissect it, measure the carbon and everything else. So this is the contour calculation. If this is the profile we're dealing with, so we measure the proportion of a percent of each hyoscine to the whole area. Okay, then we collapse into flat, we calculate the carbon, and use this equation. Okay, so you can get on the web to see this, and that is already published. So I'll stop here, and any questions I can entertain. Yes.
Hey, Lou, what about when we do bulk densities, we sort of have a water content or whatever that we sort of report with that. And I know the folks in Soil Survey, when we were doing some of the subaqueous bulk densities, they were sort of trying to come up with a sort of way to express the moisture content or whatever that the bulk density. So how do you do it with the frozen? Is it something that you worry about? And what kind of change do you get? I mean, I know the water, once it freezes, will expand about 9% or something like that. So,
well, that's a gray zone. Normally, when it's all frozen shot, we consider it always frozen. Then that's what you're dealing with, the field environment. The other problem, what you're concerned is, we call the intermediate layer, that portion of the freezing itself. If you sample during the freezing period, your bulk density is lower. But when it's salt, the water is squeezed out, then you get the most mineral material.
So how big a difference do you get between those freezes and thaws? Because, I mean, when you're calculating, say, your carbon pool, the bulk density plays a really big part. And, you know, if it's maybe just a couple percent, I guess that's not an issue. But, more than that.
Well, that's the area we're afraid to touch because you can get 20% difference easily.
Yeah,
but that 20% limit to that about 20 centimeter thickness area subject seasonal freeze thaw. For the upper part, active layer, there's no problem.
Okay.
But the frozen part, not a problem.
No problem, yes.
Yes. Yeah, it is a sticky point the way we don't know how to deal with it. This is a very Asian weather, except. Yes, Martin.
Has anybody tried using an electric saw with an abrasion bit? I know when we were first working in petrocalcic horizons, we used a jackhammer and it was kind of messy. And then the next generation went out there with these abrasive saws and could cut nice blocks out of these pits that you know we would just sort of mangle with the jackhammer. Have you tried using that in those frozen environments?
Yeah, haven't, because we're using handsaw.
Oh.
It's a slower and a pin neck. But
keeps you warm though.
So when you get a core 5 centimeter and this long, trying to use a handsaw, sometimes take time. By the time you finish, you will melt all the layers. So we use the soil sanding knife, use a hammer. You pound it, it will break apart.
Yeah.
Then use a knife to shave to clean, that's even faster. Mm-hmm. So save some time, question for Marty.
Questions then for Dr. Regenhorst in his talk on sampling the not just the subaqueous soils but the marsh soils adjacent to them?
I have a question about the roots. How do you deal with where you have a really thick layer that has a lot of roots in it? Do those cores cut through the roots so that you still get a nice clean sample?
Macaulay auger, you're asking about, for example. If the roots are really fresh, they don't do as good a job. And you get a little compaction there. And so typically, if we can, in a marsh type environment, we'll often, in fact, I think we actually cut with knives, scissors, and other kinds of cutting implements that kind of cut blocks that we actually did. We used a lot of methods, I think, for sand for doing bulk density on some of those. Surface because they will completely compact because they won't cut. You know, the core isn't a sharp core. You know, so for partially decomposed materials, that it cuts pretty nicely. But if they're fresh growing roots, they're a problem.
Yeah, because in the O and A layers in the vernal pools, trying to get through the roots to get a profile or anything is challenging.
Yeah, those we usually do what we call a peat brownie, and you just cut a block right out of it and use, you know, like a saw or some clippers or something like that, and you can get a really good bulk density measurement that way. And then once you get below that, you know, maybe 15 centimeters or something, then you can put the Macaulay in, and usually it's decomposing enough where you get a good sample.
We've also done some cases where we've taken a core, like a 4-inch or a 5-inch aluminum core, and sharpened it at the bottom edge and hammered it in.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a pretty good, you know, it'll cut through that section pretty well, and you get the volume, you can kind of get the volume pretty well.
I ordered a new tool. It's made by AMS, and it is a half of a tube. So it looks like a push probe, but it has an auger handle attached to the top of it, and one edge, it's aircraft steel. And one edge is sharpened, extremely sharp, and it's meant to twist. It's a half circle like the Macaulay, but it doesn't close off. The problem is that you have to excavate down the side of it, but it is 40 inches long. And so if you're dealing with live roots in the surface, you can get past that layer with this tool. I have not tried it in an organic soil yet, but I have used it, and it seems to work fairly well.
To come and protect the sheep? For your saber?
That's extra.
Is it expensive?
Yes.
Did they bring one here? And they got it in their exhibit.
They may have one, or they may have a picture of one upstairs. I think it was $250, but that's about the price of an auger. So,
yeah, yeah.
And you can use your own extensions with it. So it's just simply the cutting head.
Yeah. Just say we haven't solved all the problems that John has dealt with. I'd say one of the real sticking points is when you're dealing with some of these wetlands that have got a lot of tree and shrubbery in the surface horizon. Those are the, you know, if you've worked in those, they're the worst. Because they, you know, they don't cut easily and they interfere.
Macaulay auger, is that mostly for organic soils? I've seen it.
Doesn't work in sandy soils, but will work in fine textured mineral materials if the density is low, if they're sort of fluid. A lot of, you know, lagoon bottom, low energy deposits that have accumulated are soft enough that you can use them in certain marshes, but you have to be able to push them in, and you can't push them into the sandy materials. Some of the fine materials, if the density is too high, what happens is, you know, you get a point where, you know, if you can't push it in, you end up damaging, bending. Once you sort of bend them, you know, it's $1,000 investment, and they're never quite the same after you bend the vein a little bit, so you don't want to push them too far. But they're great in the right situations. They're my instrument of choice because they're fast, and you know, they give you pretty nice, clean samples, good horizon resolution, but you can only use them in certain environments.
Sometimes you have to use sort of a combination of tools because your organics might be below 50 centimeters or something like that of mineral, and you may have to use a bucket auger or something like that to get down to that. Then you can use Macaulay below that to get your sample. So sometimes it's a combination of tools that you need to use.
Well, I'd like to invite the audience. Thank you, Marty. I'd like to invite the audience to submit other ideas or suggestions or questions to me. It's john.galbraith@vt.edu, or you can just look me up on the Virginia Tech website, because I wanted to try to compile some of these methods, and the society has agreed to publish these if we get enough material to put it together. So I might ask the speakers if they wouldn't mind sharing some of the information that they gave today, and if the audience has materials that they'd like to share. Because again, if we can spread this information, it's not in the manuals right now. The ideas of hitting a frozen soil with a knife and cutting it open and shaving it clean are just not in the manuals, but they obviously need to be for some of these challenging types of soils. And we do need to have a good idea of how to get the correct amounts of carbon, because it's not just a matter of getting a sample out of the ground, but we need to have some way to estimate and extrapolate the amount of carbon on an aerial basis or a volumetric basis. So we must have some estimates of bulk density, and there's nothing in the database. So it's not like we can just go and pull surrogate information. A lot of these soils have never correctly been sampled. So if you guys would please, if you have ideas or suggestions, please share those with me. We'll try to put them together. We might start out small, but eventually we try to circulate that information to the public. All right, thank you very much.